Our political commentators today is Dale Husband and Bridget Morton. Kia ora korua.
Morena.
Kia ora, Bridget, and tēnā hui to you as well. Catherine, nice to be on your program again. Kia ora.
Thank you. Always welcome, and we appreciate your time. Dale Husband's a long-time broadcaster and Radio Wātea presenter, hosting Current Affairs program. Bridget Morton's a director with public and commercial law firm Franks Ogilvie, a former senior ministerial advisor to the previous National-led government, a National Party member, and she does also volunteer during election campaigns for the party's Deputy Leader Nicola Willis, who's of course Finance Minister, and we mention that because we're about to begin there. Bit of a scrappy week with interesting topics going somewhere but not nowhere, not fully resolving really. But let's stay on track with the looming budget stuff. A significant speech during the week, Dale, from the Finance Minister, where she continues to hold firm on tax cuts. I think she also confirms social investment is absolutely on its way back, and in fact I think we'll get its own, ironically, its own new bureaucracy while all the others are downsizing. But you know, what's your take on this confirmation again that there's no swaying on the inclusion of tax cuts in this budget?
Well, she's in a difficult position, and we've got to appreciate that with COVID and the costs to the country ballooning beyond what was expected. It was always going to be tough for her to deliver her first budget, so we'll have to cut her some slack. I'm really intrigued to see how this will play out. I find it hard to believe that we can lose so many frontline staff and still maintain service delivery. But as far as the taxes are concerned, well, the rhetoric out on the street really is that the cuts, the job losses, the savings that have been forced upon government departments are still really to pander to middle New Zealand and those who are lucky enough to have rental properties. So whilst everyone seemingly is going to get a little bit, I don't think it's going to make a hell of a lot of difference, Catherine, really, to those who are doing it toughest. And whilst we often refer to in Te Māori anyway with those disadvantaged families who might be on benefits, the reality remains that most Māori workers from working class jobs are just trying to get on with life, and I'm not anticipating there's going to be a huge amount in this next budget for them. The prices are going through the roof, as we can all note at the petrol pumps and the supermarket checkouts. So look, it's going to be a tough budget, but I don't see a hell of a lot of relief for those who need it most.
Yeah, I think, you know, you look at what is happening and still out there, and, you know, Dale pointed to that, as the cost of living is by and far the biggest issue that is happening. And I saw a Taxpayers Union Courier poll over the weekend that, you know, talked about, I think it was like 35% of respondents said it was the absolute top issue. I think it's very easy to say, you know, the tax cuts, they're not that much, they won't make a significant difference. But I think in this tight environment that lots of people will be looking to that extra money and saying, actually, I'm just grateful for that amount of money. And I do think, you know, very clearly they went into the election with a very clear pitch, which was
threatening to resign if you don't deliver them.
Yeah, but the wider pitch was that we're going to cut down on that government waste and spending and give the money back to you because you can spend it better. And that is exactly what I think the Finance Minister is doing in terms of shaping up her budget.
We're talking about wage bracket adjustments, and you've got to be careful of those. Michael Cullen, RIP, got absolutely flannelled over wage bracket adjustments that were perceived as the chewing gum budget. I know far too much about that budget, having reported that that was what it was going to be, and then it sort of spiralled into something much more dramatic. There's also, I think, some family tax, working for families adjustments as well. But Bridget, you know, are they targeting and insisting on keeping this tax budget at this time?
I think they're targeting those people that voted them in. As I say, that they came in, it's only been six-ish months since they became government. They clearly campaigned or something. They can't turn around and break promises on that. They've got to keep that steady ship. But I think you have to be clear that this budget is clearly going to be the one where the tough work is done so that they can set themselves better up for those years closer to the election.
It may be a multi-year project. Back to that in a moment. Dale, the other thing confirmed in that speech is the Finance Minister saying she believes she's now got her $1.5 billion in savings. Now, let's clarify that. That's $1.5 billion less than the former government was planning to spend. This government will still spend more than this year, but that is a change in track from what had been scheduled from the previous government. But the headlines still coming through about this idea of, is the front line completely untouched, or is that another risk that remains also, Dale?
Well, for a start, I mean, breaking promises is what politicians do, and, you know, you can always U-turn. It's happened throughout time. Look, I'd take my hat off. They needed to save some money. $1.5 billion in savings is significant, so I don't want to sort of understate that. But the reality on the street really is that no one's happy. The nurses, the police, educators, public servants, people are being marched down the road at rates unseen for generations. And so whilst there might be the savings there, at what cost? The morale of the country is absolutely taking a hit. And as many have commentated, we've lost our mojo here in New Zealand. And what's happening with people being marched down the road is really just one big advertisement for Australia.
They'll be seizing on the latest poll. I can't remember who put that out, that had a slight turn in the
taxpayer
right.
Taxpayer Courier.
Courier. Mm-hmm. So Taxpayer Union funded Courier poll. They'll be latching onto that like people on a life raft, Bridget, because that right track, wrong track tends to indicate which way the incumbent government's polling goes, and that had a slight turn for the first time in a while, and an uptick. But just back to this this other matter as well, I asked who this tax package is for. There are others more to the fiscally conservative end, or the call it the economic right of the spectrum, who are saying this is tinkering. This is doing what previous governments have done. This is not doing anything fundamental by means of reform. And what I was alluding to earlier, the debt track and the debt servicing track remains pretty, you know, ugly for years to come.
Yeah, and I think that talks to the wider picture that we are in a recession, and that's the situation. And it just points to, you know, Dale's comments about the fact that, you know, these savings that have been made in government spending are somewhat of the cause for us sort of being in this funk. And I think, very true, you know, being here in Wellington, then it's having a massive effect on the local economy. Step outside Wellington, though, and the biggest feedback you get is, yes, I want the government to spend less. They're not that concerned with public service tax cuts. They think there's been too much talk of that. They're much more concerned about actually what's happening with their local businesses, and that's where they're worried. And I think that's actually what this government wants to sort of focus on more in terms of getting that economy. And as I say, this is going to be, I think, the tough budget, so that there can be better budgets out there.
Okay, look, let's move on now. As I said, it's a bit of a grab bag today. Let's pick up on the Friday story, the power crisis and the positioning from the coalition government on the oil and gas plan. There was some fairly sophisticated angling of what happened on Friday, if you like. The oil and gas ban, of course, was on new permits. The fact is that current exploration has not turned up new gas supplies at the moment. But Dale, just coming in here again, how do you see the response to this story, and I guess how it plays into other things the government is doing, including things like fast-tracking approval of major projects?
Yeah, well, there's a hell of a lot of nervousness there too, I might add. But look, I like Shane Jones. I like the way he rolls. I speak with him regularly on our program as well. And he's a guy who likes to use a little flowery rhetoric, but nowadays he's seemingly raising his voice. The last time I heard a clip from him out of the big house, I was thinking, I hope you're taking your heart pills there, Shano, because he's sort of using this bully boy rhetoric and his references to emerald mannequins, and everybody's woke, I suppose. I am too, but I'll tell you what, we pride ourselves as a nation in protecting our environment. That goes without saying. And whilst we do need to get fuel and the like, I feel that this is a backward step for us. Across the globe, people were recognising the last government who said, no, we're not going down that path. And all of a sudden, Shane comes in with almost bully boy rhetoric saying, you know, if you don't agree with me, you're part of the woke mob. Well, I think he should temper the way that he tries to sell this back to New Zealanders. And I think he could do it more in more moderate tones rather than accusing everyone of being from the shrill left. To be honest, you know, he's not winning any favours with the Greenies or the Brownies, Shane.
Okay, and on the question of linking what happened on Friday specifically to the oil and gas ban, it's a bit of a leap, Bridget. Especially remember, Labor was investigating a giant backup with Lake Onslow, and the incoming government said, nah, not looking at that. But
I thought it was very good political positioning from the coalition, I have to say, on Friday. They took two opportunities, one being that report about how we had short gas supply and it was worse than what had been expected, combined with what, you know, our first sort of cold snap of winter and being told, you know, for a whole lot of people that thought we're in a first world country, that suddenly we had to conserve power for a couple of hours and not turn our washing machines on, I think was quite shocking to a number of people. So I think they positioned that really well because, A, they could point to Labor's virtue signalling on that oil and gas ban, because we know that they did that without research. We know that coal imports went up during the last couple of years. They didn't invest and build infrastructure around renewable. Sure, you can talk about Lake Onslow, but they did a couple of studies and then had to go on about
Hang on a minute. It is a market electricity system that is going to provide, in its own good time, additional supply when the market signals are there, Bridget.
But what this government...
This is not NZ Power, never introduced by Labor, determining who does what and who gets what.
No, but they have made it really clear that one of the things that has held back renewable energies is about resource consent. You saw that signally all last year, the Electrify New Zealand National Party policy about, you know, fast-tracking. So if you talk about political positioning, I think they did a very good job of selling the message to New Zealand.
These companies have had consents for years and not brought the new developments on.
But a lot of them have also said that they're trouble getting the security investment into New Zealand, the ability to actually build those projects because of the cost of doing so. And a lot of that has to do with consenting. And I just think if you're sitting in their seats, they did a really good job of showing to New Zealanders, this is actually why we need to fast track some of these infrastructure projects, because these are the things at risk.
They certainly made good use of a bit of serendipity. We have another word for it at times.
Poor old power companies. I just feel so sad for them, you know, that they're in such a tough spot. It's like the old ad saying, oh, the banks have made a record profit and we're supposed to jump up and down. They're making obscene profits, the power companies. Their act has been shoddy across decades now, perhaps even generations. Their investment into providing the power needed to run this country today and tomorrow has been scant. And I've got no sympathy for them. If you look at the profits that are being returned by the power companies, they are enormous. And everyday Joe just thinks that they're doing a rank job. And to threaten that we're all going to have a minute shower or to not use electrical appliances on the first cold day of the year. I mean, really?
Look, a lot of things were going on there. 10% of supply was out for maintenance in May. But the other factor, the missing link in all this, we will move on, the missing link in all this is some kind of insurance for backup supply on days like this, and we've not come up with a system for funding that yet. The corrections announcement debacle, it feels like a long time ago. It was a week ago after post-cabinet. What the hell happened, Bridget? I mean, you've worked in the corridors of power. Who's responsible for the Minister of Corrections and the Prime Minister not being able, it seemed, to explain and risking looking like they did not understand their own announcement?
Well, the Prime Minister and the Minister of Corrections are responsible. They are ultimately the ones that needed to know those numbers and know them inside out and back to front. And we know with post-cabinet that, and they know with post-cabinet, that it is a very closely watched announcement. You literally have everyone from the press gallery sitting in front of you needing to get a story out in the next 30 minutes. They knew that they had to get across that. I don't think they went back upstairs and said to themselves, oh no, that was fine. I think it was very clear that, there was ramifications for that. And the biggest one, of course, being that there was a significant law and order announcement, a big investment. We know the second most pressing issue behind cost of living is law and order. And can anyone tell us anything about happened in that press conference about the wider thing?
Was it 800 or was it 200 extra beans?
Well, there was also five other points of that announcement about rehabilitation and other spending. Nobody knows that, of course, because of the fact that they didn't know their numbers on the prison beds, which should have been some of the least important part of that announcement. So I think an absolute opportunity lost from them both.
What do you make of it, Dale?
Well, you know, working in the media, you get things wrong, don't you, sometimes? And I think we read too much into what was a bit of a stumble there. The reality is we've got to look at our prison system, the debacle that it has become, and the fact that you're putting in more beds and growing Waikerea Prison to become something of a super prison again, is an indictment on what needs to be done. You know that most of those people in there, Catherine and Bridget, are Māori. But how much consultation has there been with our people to try and design a better system? This lock them up, throw away the key, hard line on law and order is pandering to middle New Zealand, never ever come in contact with people who are on their way inside or on remand. Most of the people inside are on 6 months or less on remand. So no, I don't agree at all with growing Waikerea Prison. I think that community environments that try and modify the behaviour of men and women who are locked up on the inside, try and grow their cultural strength and to try and right the pathway that they're travelling down is a much more sensible way to move forward than building bigger prisons. So whether or not they stumbled in the press conference, I think is a smaller note than our long-term goal of how we can address what is happening on the streets of our communities and how we modify the behaviour of those people caught up in the justice system.
Well, I think that just points to exactly what I was saying, is because one of the key things in the announcement, which I think was really good, was extending rehabilitation programs to prisoners on remand. Because we know with the delays in the justice system at the moment that people are spending more and more time on remand, more time shut up before they've even had a chance to plead their case. And therefore, actually addressing them at that point in time is really, really important. So, as I say, that was the wasted opportunity for them stuffing up this press conference, was actually there's some good stuff in there. Yeah, but the focus became all about prison beds.
Speaking of messages, the school lunches update, I'm still trying to work out whether this is good news or bad news. It will be, they'll be retained, but we ended up having this big debate over whether, was it Kinwa was woke or whatever. Spinoff did actually a hilarious story on what was woke and what wasn't woke. Anyone moderately in touch with contemporary nutritional kind of information would see that the woke stuff actually is probably better for you than the sausage rolls. However, was that just a case, again, Bridget, of the ACT Party leader needing to talk to his audience while announcing something that actually was comparatively good news? The lunches are likely to stay.
Well, I think you've hit the nail on the head, because David Seymour went into last year's election talking about how there was a big waste of money. He had to find savings somewhere in this program. I think he spoke to probably an older generation of people where sandwiches, a piece of fruit and a muesli bar, if you're lucky, was a great lunch and still is a great lunch. But I do think that we want to make sure that there is lunches that kids are actually eating. That'll be key. They've made this, they've got a review in a couple of years' time.
If they're hungry, they'll eat them.
Well, that's not like, I think most people with kids will know that doesn't always happen, though.
Maybe the kids aren't starving. If they're starving, they'll eat them.
I tell you what, I wouldn't turn up to Dancing David's restaurant. I want Jesse Mulligan to sort out what the sandwiches the kids are getting at school. And it does seem small change, doesn't it, when we've got issues of AUKUS, issues of Gaza, issues of China and geopolitical pressures, and here we are talking about school lunches and pseudoephedrine. It really bugs me that he's so annoyed that some families, God forbid, are taking home some sandwiches from school because they're hungry and they can utilise them. I mean, really?
Look, it looks like they're here to stay. What you get is still under debate. Gillian Genta referred to the Privileges Committee. Last seen in Chatham Islands, I'm not sure if she's back yet. At some point she's going to have to front this. What will the Privileges Committee do with this?
Well, I think the Privileges Committee can't do a lot. They technically have a lot of power. It obviously will create another day of media, another day of focus that the Greens don't want on their sort of badly behaving, poor-performing kind of caucus issue they've got at
that. Whack in that one-off poll, actually. Again, the context is a one-off poll, not an election year. But I think they lost something like 4 percentage points that Labour would have been very happy to pick up, going up to 30%, I think. But carry on.
Yeah, and I think the problem for the Greens has been over the last 5 months is that they've spent so much time talking about themselves, not a lot of time talking about moving forward. They've got this big sort of scene setting that they need to do post James Shaw. I think actually to Marama Davidson and Chloe Swarbrick's credit, I think they handled the Julian Genta stuff pretty well when they came out of it. They didn't overblow it. They didn't underplay
it. Restorative justice in the tone,
yeah,
isn't it?
There is, but that's, that's on brand. They can't come out with a really tough on law and order message because that's not who they are. So I do think they handled that well. You've seen Julian Genta front up a bit. She's talked a little bit more about the circumstances in regards to that florist. But regardless, they have to do something to draw a line under all these caucus problems they've had and move back to actually, climate change and social justice and the things they actually were elected to do.
Dale.
I felt for the Wahine. I really do, and that big house is full of snide commentary and people sort of hiding behind the expected behaviour in the house. Out in the street, of course you'd go and lean up and get close to people. And I think a lot of voters accept that. You know, there's a saying in Te Māori, you can parry blows, but you can't parry words. And so we're just seeing enacted in Parliament what would happen on the street too. And, you know, the Privileges Committee, to front up to them, I mean, even the name is unusual, isn't it? I'd like to see plenty who are already privileged with their mahi in the big house fronting up to explain why they think they can hide behind the words in the way that they do. Hey, also, Catherine, I was at the Kapahaka here in Tamaki Makaurau over the weekend. It was really brilliant, and the energy there sort of plays against a lot of the rhetoric we're seeing, Māori advantage here, less to our Māori, and it was just full of energy and power that I think we could all learn from. And I'm proposing that we have a cross-party political kapahaka, and Luxon can get in there, Winston can get in there as well, and show off his riz, because he's got a bit of charisma, the old guy, hasn't he?
And honestly, anyone who's ever been to Te Matatini, what an event, 20,000 people packed in, and white bait sandwiches, just saying. Sandwiches are on my mind at the moment. Probably not, they'd be very woke and very expensive. But look, it's a fair point. I think the other point you're making, Dale, is that we've got head incidents in the past, and I don't want to make this agenda thing, but I'm about to. We've had a male grab a male out in the, what do you call that bit by the side edge of the house? Just lobbies.
Yeah.
You know, we've had more than one confrontation, more than one very senior politician, physically accost or get in each other's faces. What happened this time, though, was in front of a camera and the whole world judged it and will continue to judge it. I think the Kapahaka event is an absolutely brilliant idea.
they have a bit of a band. I think Shane Retty's a guitarist. Simon Bridges used to be a drummer. But
Damian Salmon made a very interesting observation in an article I read at the weekend, that right at a time when so many New Zealanders in general are getting interested in te ao Māori and unfortunately pinching all the places on te reo courses that Māori themselves are struggling to get on, why now this focus? So, yeah.
People are voting with their feet, aren't they, Catherine? You know, those mostly enlightened New Zealanders realise, hey, this is a language of our land, and whether you're black, white or brindle, you know, te reo Māori has a spot for everyone in everyone's lives. And I think that they're too fearful of this in Wellington, and the people are voting with their feet, thus the full houses in these learning environments. And it's great. I really appreciate when you use te reo Māori. I can hear it filtering through RNZ regularly. And Bridget, I'll see you at a te reo Māori course near you.
Now, we're going to finish with the Labour Deputy Leader. I've come full circle on this, Carmel Cepelloni, and the rumours as yet unconfirmed that she's on a reality TV show. It's been filmed, it sounds like, Celebrity Treasure Island. I think Joe Moyer, RNZ's political editor, will get another scoop. And I began by thinking, for goodness sake, former Deputy Prime Minister, you know, are you serious? And I've come full circle. What's your take on it?
Yeah, I completely agree with you, because at first I was just like, oh, this has got Dancing with the Stars, Rodney High dropping his partner on her
smaller,
head.
But
there's the twerking, you know, David Seymour in hot pants.
But that's smaller.
I forgot about Rodney.
And there's those two things just came to mind. I was like, this is a disaster idea. And then I went, if I backed anyone on Celebrity Treasure Island, it'd be Carmel Cepelloni. She has got the right tone. I reckon she could show a really good part of her personality. Didn't necessarily come through in the election last year. I reckon this could be maybe high stakes, but could be possibly a great move for her.
Also, a Pacifica woman reaching out, I mean, she's, you know, probably got a great haul already with South Auckland electorate voters and everything else, but it's often about motivation, Dale, isn't it, sometimes, of your voter pool and getting them to turn out. I think she's the right person to do it, and to Bridget's point, we haven't seen it yet, but may well just pull off a bit of a coup here, no pun or double meaning intended.
Yeah, I'm a bit nervous about it, because Carmel is well positioned here. She's a wahine of strength, of character. She grew up in Waitara. She has a pretty good handle on working class New Zealand, and I just wonder that being involved in some of these programs, which I find a bit naff too, to be honest, from time to time, does more damage than good. I don't know about twerking, whether that got David elected. And Carmel, I think, should maintain a sort of
decorum.
States,
you think.
Yeah,
so
a statesman likes.
You're on the other side of this.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it?
I started there, but I'm also thinking of how do you reach younger voters? How do you reach demographics these days who aren't sitting reading, you know, the.
TikTok, Catherine! Get on TikTok there. I don't get on TikTok, but maybe Carmel could go there instead of Treasure Island.
This is a deeper opportunity, and I know it's all manipulated to hell. This is a deeper opportunity to build a deeper profile. Look, let's see. But I found it an interesting little journey I went on.
I'd like to nominate Catherine Ryan as the next contestant on Celebrity Treasure Island.
I'd be gone within half an hour. Thank you both. Bridget Morton and Dale Husband.